I'm going to start by reading a little bit from the beginning of Music Man. Just a little bit. I don't know if you remember the start of Music Man, but these salesmen are on a train going through the country, and it's Harold Hill, who's the guy who's going to be selling musical instruments and teaching people to learn how to play them. He doesn't know what he's doing, but he's just selling instruments. But anyway, the salesmen are talking about the work of salesmen, and it's done to the rhythm of a train. It's called Rock Island. Not going to read much of it, but let's see if I can track with this. You can talk, you can talk, you can bicker, you can talk, you can bicker, 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 you can talk, you can talk, you can talk, 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 bicker, 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 you can talk all you want, but it's different than it was. No, it ain't, no, it ain't, but you got to know the territory, shh, 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 like that. You know, I could do that faster, I think. Oh, no, I don't know. You can talk, you can bicker, you can bicker, you can talk. You can talk, 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 bicker, bicker, bicker. You can talk all you want, but it's different than it was. No, it ain't, no, it ain't, but you got to know the territory. Ch-ch-ch. I think I blew some of the words, but anyway, you can talk, you can bicker. And that's what Peter's concerned about, because they're talking and bickering. And today we're going to look very quickly, and you see in the list there are 12 points and 12 ways we talk. And he says you got to be very careful about how you talk, how you bicker. And we're going to look at that. Let's get the text up here, and let's stand and read it if we could, and then we'll talk about it. We're going to talk. We're not going to bicker. We're just going to read this right here, okay? Now, finally, all of you should be like-minded and sympathetic, should love believers, and be compassionate and humble, not paying back evil for evil or insult for insult, but on the contrary, giving a blessing, since you were called for this, so that you can inherit a blessing. For the one who wants to love life and to see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from spreading deceit. And he must turn away from evil and do what is good. He must seek peace and pursue it, because the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are open to their request. But the face of the Lord is against those who do what is evil. And who will harm you if you are deeply committed to what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness, you are blessed. Do not fear what they fear or be disturbed. But honor the Messiah as Lord in your hearts. Always be ready to give a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. However, do this with gentleness and respect, keeping your conscience clear, so that when you are accused, those who denounce your Christian life will be put to shame. For it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. For Christ also suffered for sins, once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring you to God, after being put to death in the fleshly realm, but made alive in the spiritual realm. In that state, he also went and made a proclamation to the spirits in prison, who in the past were disobedient, when God patiently waited in the days of Noah while an ark was being prepared. In it, a few, that is, eight people, were saved through water. Baptism, which corresponds to this, now saves you, not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the pledge of a good conscience toward God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Now that he has gone into heaven, he is at God's right hand with angels, authorities, and powers subject to him. Thank you. Be seated. Let me just do a few things, say a few things. By the way, this passage about saved through water and, oh boy, you ought to see the commentators go, have you ever seen that? It's an Asian dish where you put noodles in and then in hot stuff and it just goes like that. Commentators go crazy over this sort of thing. You know, what is this thing like? Wait, in Noah's day and they're saved through water? Wait, I thought people died in the water and then the spirits in prison. Who are those guys? And he did what, and so forth and so on. So it's really fun. I'm going to give you a short take on that, and just say, I guess you could say in some respects my ignorance is limitless, but I'm going to give it a quick shot here and there. But let me just say something about a few words or a few things that we read. First, be like-minded. You remember he said that, be like-minded? That doesn't mean be like unthinking. Just we had a restaurant near us in Evanston called Clark's, and their big ad was to have people with no pupils in their eyes. They just had blank eyes, and they're saying, must eat at Clark's. That was the thing. You know, we were just kind of, I don't know why, but we must go to Clark's. That's not what the church is. Must be of one mind. Wait, I had a question. Must be of one mind. How dare you? Must be of one mind. No, look, he's basically saying that we have the mind of Christ, or that we will come together on the scripture. Now, we may go back and forth, but we're seeking the same thing. We're seeking the gold, so to speak. And you don't come around, say, we must now come around the guy with the biggest degrees, or the one who is the wealthiest, or the one who's been the most, just the one who's been here the longest, or the prayer warrior, or something like that. All of those can be good. But he says, we come together around the word of God, so be of one mind. And then he talks about, you won't be harmed. I mean, what's the problem here if they come after you? Well, then he goes on to say, and by the way, if you do suffer, excuse me, I thought you said we wouldn't be harmed, and now you just turn around and say we will be harmed. There's a difference between being harmed and hurting. In college, we had a pep rally in chapel one day. It wasn't chapel, it was assembly. And the coach was introducing the football team. And he brought this guy named Ronnie out, who looked like just an absolute Neanderthal. And he says, now Ronnie's going to make a good player when he discovers the difference between pain and injury. You know, that's a great testimony. But just because you're hurting doesn't mean that you're really ultimately harmed. And it's a great thing for us to know that even though we might be persecuted and beat up and this and that, and even killed in some parts of the world, you can't harm them because we got heaven, you know? And actually, we often have heaven on earth and deliverance on earth. He says, God's face will be set against these people who do evil. I'm thinking of like a stare and a scowl. I mean, wouldn't it be creepy to be in a restaurant and you're just there with the family or the friends and stuff, and you look over and there are guys like this. And then he goes like this. And I think, oh, that's just something. He must be thinking deeply here. You know, do you want this sort of appetite? You don't want God staring and scowling at you, preparing to take you on. And so let's do our lives as though God would be smiling on us and enjoying us. The spirit's in prison. Okay, I've got to ask Rich to come up and explain that. No, look, here's what I think. Quick take, and we can talk about it. Now, tonight we're going to have one of these discussion things afterwards. We're going to talk about head covering and hell and capital punishment and the Seventh-day Adventists and all kinds of stuff. That's after the business meeting, members meeting tonight. But quick take on this is that these were not persons. Some people say, oh, these are the people who died before they sinned in Noah's time, and now they're somewhere in purgatory or hell, and Jesus is going to go down and say, see, I told you so, or something like that. They come up with different theories, but here's the one that I think is most reasonable, that these were demons, essentially, spirits, minions of Satan, who have been up to bad things, but they're thinking that it's going to work out, and Jesus comes to them and says, oh, by the way, it ain't going to work out for you guys. And then he goes into this Noah's Ark business. Well, let me just say very quickly, and I'm glad Rich mentioned baptism. That's one of my prayer notes in my prayer diary every day. It's just like, God, give us new converts that we might baptize. Here's what I think he's saying. He says that the dividing line between death and life was the ark. And there are only eight in the ark. And by the way, he talks about the patience. Look, he created Eden. It was wonderful. There was this fall. And then they just go wacky, and they're doing bad stuff. And, you know, it's like he could whack them right away. But he said, no, I'm going to wait. We're going to build this ark. And some people say it's like 120 years. He just waits. He says, all right, I'm telling you, just you better cut it out. And they keep going, and they keep going. And then finally, eight people he rescues. And the ark is the vessel that separates the living from the dying. And then he says, the baptismal waters separate the living from the dying. It's not as though like, oh, I got to get in that water so I'll be saved. No. It's not the water, the cleansing water or the filth. It's the pledge of a good conscience. You know, it's like it's got to mean something. And by the way, sometimes pledges are made. You know, you have letters of intent. You've heard of those? Some high school student, highly recruited, was signed a letter of intent. And then as it gets closer, he goes somewhere else. Have you seen that? Well, baptism should come at the point of that initial declaration where you sign a letter of intent. It's not a certificate of achievement. You know, it's not as though, okay, I professed Christ back in 1963, and they've been watching me all these decades, and now we're going to baptize somebody to say, you made it. You're the real deal. In fact, they baptized very quickly, actually. Now, there's a place for counseling and so forth, but you're baptized and you're saying, I'm making a pledge. Well, that's a letter of intent to live a Christian life. And he says the clean conscience is one that says, I'm going to stick with the deal. And so that's the division. We could do a lot of other stuff, but let's get to the language real quick. Okay, I'm not totally chickening out here, but sort of, all right? No, this is amazing. Can we project those 12 things up there? I want to go through quickly. 11 of them are things that we say or other people say. One of them is something that God says, Christ says. So here we go, insulting. Don't give insult back to insult. Well, being in the showbiz mindset today, I found it's a serious reading. It's a dramatic reading. We're going to give this a little class, you know, going to step it up a little bit. I'm going to read a dramatic reading from Pee-wee's Big Adventure here. This is when Pee-wee comes out and runs into Francis, and Francis wants his bike. All right, just bear with me. I'm going to make this as august as I can. Good morning, Pee-wee. Hello, Francis. This is my birthday. My father said I can have anything I want. Good for you and your father. Guess what I want? A new brain? No, your bike. What's so funny, Pee-wee? It's not for sale, Francis. My father says everything is negotiable, Pee-wee. I wouldn't sell my bike for anything. Not for $100 billion, $1 trillion. You're crazy. I know you are, but what am I? You're a nerd. I know you are, but what am I? You're an idiot. I know you are, but what am I? 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 Infinity. That'll settle it. I'm not. You are. No way. No way. Knock it off. Knock it off. Cut it out. Cut it out. Shut up. Make me. Why don't you make me? Because I don't make monkeys. I just train them. Pee-wee, listen to reason. I'm listening to reason. He does this thing like this. I'm listening. Not that I ever saw the movie. Pee-wee. That's my name. Oh, Pee-wee. Pee-wee says, that's my name. Don't wear it out. Remember when I first saw your bike? You rode past my house. I ran out to tell you how much I liked it. I love that story. You'll be sorry, Pee-wee Herman. All right. Peter is saying, don't do Pee-wee and Francis. Okay? I know you are, but what am I? Make me. I don't make monkeys. I just train them. You know, you're a nerd. I know you are, but what am I? That kind of stuff. He says, don't get into that. Don't go into this kind of little ya-ya, tit-for-tat sort of thing. He says, that's not really who we are. Now look, there is a place to insult in the Bible. There are insults, all right? Jesus talked about serpents or John the Baptist, you know, in that time, serpents, whitewashed tombstones. Amos said something about fat cows of Bashan. That's not nice. As we would say today, Amos, was that helpful? You feel better, you know, but there is a place for that. By the way, do you know there are fat cows on Bashan up in the Golan Heights? That's one of the places to grow great beef in Israel. So, there is a place, and I mentioned the other night that Churchill was just an expert at that. He would always have this back and forth with Lady Astor. Winston, if you were my husband, I would poison your coffee. If I were your husband, I would knowingly drink it. You know, this kind of stuff. So it can be funny. But if you're into this tit-for-tat thing, then you're really not representing Christ well. Just take it on yourself. Just roll with it. And by the way, it might be true. You know, that's one reason to take it. Like, hey, you're lazy, or you you're a whiner, or you're this or that, and yeah, you're right. That's one reason not to come back, all right? But don't be tit-for-tat insulters. And then he talks about blessing. Be one who does blessing. The civil rights movement went fast forward in 1954 with the school board decision. Was it Topeka? The school board decision where the Supreme Court said that the old separate but equal won't work. We've got to start integrating because separate is inherently unequal. And so 6 years later in New Orleans, in Orleans Parish, the judge finally said, we're going to do this. And the little test case was a girl named Ruby Nell Bridges. She was 6 years old. And by November, they thought, here we go. We're going to try to do this. She was the test case. And so U.S. Marshals picked her up. And by the way, you know, there's a Norman Rockwell, famous Norman Rockwell painting of Ruby Nell Bridges. And this little girl, this little black girl, is walking there. And you have U.S. Marshals with helmets in front and behind, and things scrawled on the wall and splattered tomatoes. And she's walking along, and I think her mom lost her job. They had even a little coffin with a little black doll in it that somebody displayed. It was tough. It was really brutal. But she's walking along with these guards, and she's going to a class where she has one teacher, and that teacher's dedicated to her. And the teacher loved her, and she's looking out the window as Ruby Nell is coming up the walk, and the crowds are screaming, and her mouth is moving. She's talking. And she finally said, Ruby Nell, what was that? And she said, I was praying for the people. So they don't know what they're doing, and I just pray for their well-being and their conversion. That's exactly what he's talking about. He says, when they call you names, when they despise you, when they treat you badly, he says, try this. Try answering back with, and this is a word, eulogy or good speaking. And you might even say, you know, hey, how are the grandkids? Man, they're beautiful, you know? Or tell me, I noticed you had the operation last year. Are you recovering well? Man, I hope so. I'll be praying for you. That'll mess them up. You know, synapses will start firing. Smoke will come out their ears. I mean, you just, the society says, don't get mad, get even. And he says, no. That's not how we roll here in Christianity. And then he talks about evil speaking, the tongue is evil. Boy, James is the one who just unpacks that. If you go to the third chapter of James, not many should become teachers, my brothers, knowing that we will receive a stricter judgment, for we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a mature man who's also able to control the whole body. When we put bits into the mouth of horses to make them obey us, we also guide the whole animal. And consider ships, though very large and driven by fierce winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So too, though the tongue is a small part of the body, it boasts great things. Consider how large a forest a small fire ignites. And the tongue is fire. The tongue is a fire. The tongue, a world of unrighteousness, is placed among the parts of our bodies, pollutes the whole body, sets the course of life on fire, and is set on fire by hell. Wowzer. And it goes on. There's a lot of evil speaking. The Bible talks about evil speaking as gossip. I read Numbers once all the way through, and I kept seeing the word murmur, murmuring, murmuring. Oh, I freed you from Egypt. Murmur, murmur. Well, you know, we had it comfortable back there. Murmur, murmur. Oh, we're hungry here. Okay, here's manna. Here's, you know, here's a pillar of fire. Here's this, here's that. Murmur, murmur. And God is just saying, what is it with you people? There are all kinds of ways the Bible says you're speaking evil. Let me just say that, picking up on James, there's a way to do tongue arson. You know, they think maybe the wildfires in Australia were started by some people, or some guy in California or something will just kick a campfire aside, and the next thing you know, you got 100,000 acres gone. He says, if you are an arsonist with your tongue, burning things down, destroying a lot of stuff that shouldn't be destroyed, then you're just going to get God's stare and scowl. You're going to have some real problems there. Deceiving. I saw a movie the other night, just a part of it, and I think it was called Matilda, and had this little girl. And here's Danny DeVito and I think Ray Perlman is his wife, and they were this horrible couple of parents, just horrible. They'd lost track of what age she was. Like, shouldn't she be in school? I don't know. I think she's just terrible parents. And he would sell wrecked cars that he kind of jimmied up to make them look good, and he'd put Bondo on instead of bolts and so forth. Just the sleaziest guy. And really, you have to say to Christians, I mean, he had to say this, don't be sleazy. Don't be, by the way, the word here has to do like with a fishing lure or a bait. Don't hook people in to things where they suffer harm. I mean, it should go without saying, but no, it doesn't. Sometimes, I had a friend once who was, I'll be as vague as I can about this, but a great, great guy in our church, and he was selling things in a major city somewhere in the Midwest and selling to corporations, and we would go out for pizza after church, the families, and had the best time. And he started telling me, I said, well, what'd you do this week? Well, I did this, this, and this. And I said, well, what was that about? He said, sometimes I have to create a situation. I thought, well, what's that? That sounds pretty vague. He said, well, look, sometimes you have a purchasing agent who is so slow, he needs the system, I need the sale, and so I have to do something like, oh, prices are going up in October, even though they're not. And that gets him moving, and then I make the sale, I'm happy, he's happy, everything's good. And I thought, what? You're like a leader in our church, a lay leader, and you're creating situations, you're deceiving, you're drawing people in. I mean, this is not where we ought to be as Christians. And then we have requesting. He says, listen, make your request known unto God. Just turn to God. Ask him for things. Now, this comes to mind. I had the most amazing visit to a factory, workshop, whatever you would call it the other day. John Kluckey has an incredible, magical kingdom. I've been to Disney World. I've been to Tokyo Disneyland. I've seen nothing like what's inside his walls. And he has a machine that's this big bath of water, and they have all these mechanical things going around, and they ended up pulling this out of it. This is, I guess, aluminum, you know, half an inch thick or something. This is metal, and look what, it cuts these little precise things out. The end, really does go in there and out of there, but that little fine end. And you know how they do it? Well, obviously they have blades and they have diamond things. No, it's water with garnet grit or something. By the way, some of our videos here look like garnet grit going in a news thing. But anyway, they train with, I think it's 600 gazillion pounds of pressure, garnet grit, and they cut very precise things. Now look, I was in the humanities. I don't know this stuff. And Sharon was a math major, a little closer to the sciences. But you could just see him snickering behind. We never caught him at it, but we knew he was lying, because water under pressure with a little bit of garnet grit doesn't cut that sort of thing. It's like, yeah, sounds nice, yada, 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 yada. Thank you very much. Next show, you know? But it's true. I mean, honestly, you can check this out. And John's right there. Ask him later. And he'll say, look, I was just joking with the pastor. He's such a turkey. No, I think it's true. But I still can hardly believe it. Why do I bring this up here? Because that's the way people are with prayer. It's like, you know, ask the Father and ask him particular things. And, oh, well, he knows everything. He knows what's best. Why would he do this? Or like, oh, well, it's just vague stuff. And people who pray die and this and that. So it's just, yeah, fine, prayer, prayer, prayer. I'm telling you, it works. We could have a testimony thing, very specific thing. My son's writing a book on this little study thing, my pastor, about this, and we're going into specific praying. He says, prove God, ask for something specific, and he may well say no, but you'll know that he said no, and you'll know when he says yes. And it's astounding. So just as I was dumbfounded by how this worked, you will be dumbfounded if you become a person of prayer, how he answers these things. He says, so be a requester. I'm going to flip these things. He says, when someone makes an inquiry of you, I'm going to put inquiring next. When someone says, hey, what is this thing about? That doesn't seem right and stuff. He says, be ready to give an answer. Now, there's a series of books by a Scottish publisher, and they're called Critical Questions Answered. This is one of them by Greg Weldy, who teaches at Southeastern Seminary. Why is there evil in the world and so much of it? Okay, the problem of evil. It's about 35,000 words. This is called apologetics. A person makes inquiry. Now, it can be two kinds. It can be a genuine question like, wow, I just see this evil. Help me here. A Christian could ask it, another could ask it, an outsider. Say, what's going on here? How in the world could this be? That's a genuine thing. So, well, let me help you here. Take a deep breath. I know your daughter died of leukemia at age 8. This is a tragedy. A terrible thing happened. But God's on his throne. But let's talk about it. For many, it's just a rhetorical question. It's a challenge. Like, oh, yeah, if your God's so good and all-powerful, then how can evil happen? You know, take that. And instead of coming unglued, you take a deep breath and you say, well, I don't necessarily know all the answers, but here's the thing. Do your homework a bit. Sometimes you just know a scripture verse. And sometimes you just know somebody who knows somebody who can ask somebody or something like that. But just be ready to defend. And that's a good thing. They asked me to do one book. I don't know if they'll accept it, but anyway, I'm up to 38,000 words on this thing in this series. And it, by the way, the word apologetics means defense, and that's the actual word in the Greek right here when we're looking at it. And my assigned topic is, if Christianity is so good, why are Christians so bad? It was a short book. I just said, beats me, you know, and turned it in. That wasn't acceptable. But no, and so I've talked about that. But a lot of what we do, actually, in academics, is to frame answers so that we're prepared to answer. Or we're prepared to know what to read, to whatever, whatever. I was reading about a fellow who died the other day, and he was not a Christian, but he had a friend who gave him Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. Here, just read this. And it made a big difference. So part of what we do is we really do defend the faith. He says, do it with kindness and respect. In other words, like, you idiot, you know, that's not what you're doing. But you do it with a certain kind of class and civility. And respect doesn't mean you talk baby talk. You treat them like adults and says, you asked? Okay, sit down. We're going to talk grown up here. And I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to say, well, wasn't that a special? You know that ad for that deal where they compromised and he wanted a man cave and she wanted to be close to nature? You know, and this bear comes lumbering out and shakes the refrigerator. And, oh, he's such a good bear. You know, oh, you asked a big question. Wow, you're smart, you know. No, you talk to him like adults. And you're this is not Nerf ball. I mean, it's not like you're in the living room with a Nerf bat and a Nerf ball and you got Hummel figures and all this and you're just wailing away and not breaking anything. Things could get broken when you're doing serious defense and argument. However, you do it with respect. And you do it with kindness. There's a place for that. Accusing. Not all accusing is bad. He says, if they accuse you, whatever, whatever, you think, oh, accusing bad. No, look, we accuse, right? Do you remember when the prophet got in David's face and he told a little story about a lamb that was taken away and he said, oh, that's bad, took it, and then the guy died. He said, you're the man. You did it. You killed Uriah. You stole his wife, Bathsheba. Bingo. Just like that. We're going to be accused of some things, and some things just aren't true. We're slandered. He says, expect that you would be slandered. I was just reading about this coronavirus. Did you notice that the guy who started the warning, I think he was an ophthalmologist in Wuhan, and he said, guys, it was a kind of a little circle of professionals. He says, guys, there's something here that's a little more potent, we kind of better be careful. Anyway, they started retweeting it or whatever they do and sending it around, and then the Chinese government went freak. And they said, this is a lie. He's spreading rumors. He's telling lies. And the poor guy, they dragged him in and made him sign a confession for telling lies to disturb the social order. And then when they finally figured it out, they didn't treat him enough. He died of this. And then all of a sudden, they're coming around saying, maybe there is something to that. And now a bunch of people have died. This is the way they felt about the Christians. These guys are saying there is one God. They weren't quoting the Nicene Creed yet, but they were quoting essentially the Nicene Creed and saying Jesus is on his throne and he is God. And And if you don't accept him, then he will not accept you and things like this. And it's like, disturbing the social order. These guys are a menace to society and so forth. He says, it's coming your way. But understand, they can hurt you, but they can't harm you. So be strong. And then it says, they were denouncing. Denouncing is even bigger. It's not like you did this. It's more like you are this. It's just writing you off. If you just go a few pages down the line to 3 John, you'll see that they say Diotrephes, you know, John is saying Diotrephes wants to be a big shot in the congregation, and so when I come in, he treats me like dirt so that he can stay on the top. It wasn't like Diotrephes did this yesterday. It's like this is Diotrephes. So there's a place for denouncing someone, you know? But then there's this cruel kind of denouncing, and we really do it today. I mean, the culture does it. We're called the cancel culture, you know? If you take one misstep, if you stumble, if you misspeak, if there's something you wrote 13 years ago or if something you did what a year ago or whatever, they will find that and they will blow it up and blow it up and say, so forget him. Just write him off. He's a creep. That's happening today to Christians. It happened back then. This guy's nothing but trouble. Don't even get near him. Thank God they didn't have some of the other things like Twitter to just now get it all over the place and everybody in Asia Minor knows this or something like this. But he says, don't think you're going to escape the cancel culture for being a Christian. You will be denounced and you will be accused. Just understand what? Jesus was denounced and accused. He was written off. He'd been there, you know? And then you have proclaiming. So he goes and proclaims to the spirits in prison. That's a kind of speaking that Jesus did. By the way, I was walking last night down on the waterfront, and I saw the Admiral Kimmel Memorial, you know? And I got my library card the other day. I got the Admiral Kimmel book. You know, he's a native of Henderson, and he took all the blame, so to speak, he and the Army general there, for Pearl Harbor. Like you were asleep at the switch. And I started reading this thing a little bit, and they said, whoa, 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 not so fast. I mean, they sent a warning out, but he thought the danger might be more in terms of mines, and so he grouped the ships together where he could guard them carefully. There was some kind of atmospheric problem in D.C., and they couldn't get the message to him, so they sent it by telegram. And a guy who was supposed to deliver the telegram, attack imminent, didn't even make it to Admiral Kimmel at the time. And there were other things involved. But he was convenient. He was ripped. Some of his stars were taken away. And he was basically drummed out of the Navy, so to speak. I mean, I think it was reduced to a lower kind of admiral. And then people started to work on it. And they started to work on it. And then finally, the Senate came to say, and it read this on the plaque, the Senate says, actually, he wasn't the sole guy. This wasn't fair. And yet, how long was it? It was decades and decades of saying, this guy's a loser, this guy's a loser. And then Jesus gets to say, and by the way, can you imagine how exciting the crucifixion was to the demons? You know, oh, he's drawing crowds up at Galilee. Oh, everybody's excited about Jesus, you know. Oh, he's going from strength to strength. And like, whoa, hey, he's in trouble. Oh, my goodness, he's got the Romans concerned. No, really, is this going to happen? They're going to kill him. Sweet. And then he gets up, killed in the body, raised in the spirit, and then on the way to on high, he says, by the way, I won. You lose. They won. You and your creeps lose. I mean, that's a paraphrase. But anyway, you make those proclamations, and it's the same proclamation we make today. We made it in the singing today. Christ is there. And by the way, life is better. One of the songs we sang was about because he lives, I can face tomorrow. He says in one place, don't fear what those other people fear. People get all nervous and so forth and says, look, because he lives, I can face tomorrow. I don't know the details, but he owns the future. And so he says, we are able with Christ to proclaim Christ is risen, Christ is powerful. So there's one more, interceding. It doesn't say that he is, but look at that last verse. He has now gone into heaven. He is at God's right hand with angels, authorities, and powers. Well, what's he doing at the right hand of God? Romans 8:34 says, "Who is the one who condemns? Christ Jesus is the one who died, but even more, has been raised. He is also at the right hand of God and what? Intercedes for us." Jesus is up there right now, and when we sin and the devil says, "You deserve hell, let me get my hands on him," Christ says, "He's with me. And even though you see this happening, my blood shed covered his guilt, and he's with me." He's doing that right now. He needs to do it for me daily. You know, it's not like, well, I remember when I sinned back in, I guess it was 2017. Yeah, I think that was the day, you know. No, I can just say yesterday. And so Jesus is working real hard to intercede for me, but he does it effectively. So when we stumble, when we return an insult, a cheap shot, if we're a little deceiving, if we fail at prayer, if we just speak evil, start brush fires that don't need to be started, if we're asking snarky questions of good people, if we fail at proclaiming, Jesus is speaking. He's interceding for us. I heard at the end of a Southern Baptist Convention message once about the biggest bullfight in Spain one year. Everybody was there. I don't know if it was in Barcelona or what have you. Everybody turned out, standing room only. And in fact, a little kid was standing right by the rail. And then the bull comes out. And I mean, this is some champion bull. This is like the big guy, the Super Bowl of bulls. He comes out. Everybody jumps to their feet, bumps this little kid. He falls into the arena, tumbles down into the dirt. He freezes. He just starts to run. And he's out there in the middle of the arena, and the bull, with his snorting and swishing of the tail and stuff, spies him, and he starts to lumber toward him. And this little kid, you know, 6-year-old, something like this. And a guy sees what's happening. The kid fell out here. A fella from this direction sees it, jumps into the ring, and runs to the kid, and gets to him just before the bull hits him. And he grabs him up, and he runs to the opposite wall with this kid tucked under his arm, running for his life, adrenaline pumping and so forth. The bull whirls around, sees them, and takes off after them. And as he gets to the wall, the man shifts the child this way, and he hands it off to people ready to receive him, just as the bull slams him into the wall. At the point of his death, he delivered the child to safety. That is what Jesus does for us. With his death, he delivers the undeserving to safety, we who put him in peril, and he is pleased to do it. But he is not dead in the arena. He rises, he's at the right hand of God, and he says, "Let me speak for them." How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation as this? Rich talked about baptism. The true conscience baptism is that which separates us from death. Not the water, but the heart committed. We're going to sing an invitation hymn. It could be that today it strikes you that I do not have the safety that comes from Jesus' death and his intercession. I'm not in the ark. I urge you, don't delay. If you're wrestling with it and want to talk to people, we have a response room. People are in there. We can talk with you. But you know, it said at Pentecost, a certain number were added to the church that day. You know, it's not like a bunch of people said they might be interested and we got back to them and 6 years later we had a few of them. It says that day they were added. You have the eunuch who's in the, "Here's water. What will forbid me from being baptized?" You know, there is just an immediacy to it. Now, for some people, they say it and then it doesn't pan out. It's a pledge of a good conscience, not just a ritual we go through. But as we sing this, we're just going to sing a few stanzas. David, what are we singing?
It's Ancient Words.
Ancient Words. I'll be down here. This will be off. And it could be the case that today you say, no more delay, no more delay. Thank you, Jesus. And by the way, then he'll mess with you and he'll say, now that you're mine and you call me Lord, talk this way and don't talk that way, all right? So he's a very intrusive guy. It's not like, okay, I got that settled, now I can live like the devil. No, he takes over your life. But the question is, are you his?